Well, hey, it's another week of the On The Ball Soccer Podcast. This week, me, Gio and Kevin talk about Manchester United's continued decline. Swansea are beaten at home against Arsenal. It's another win for Arsenal. Top of the league, continue to impress, does Mesut Ozil. We'll talk about Liverpool, Daniel Sturridge, Luis Suarez, two goals on his return. And we have La Liga news. Gareth Bale, Lionel Messi, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, and we'll talk about the Bundesliga, Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Munich, both unbeaten. All this and much more, we're on the ball. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you are listening to this show. It's the On The Ball Soccer Podcast. We're back for another week. Gio, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you, Jake.
Always give you a shout out. And Kevin Camacho's here with us this week. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm good, you know. It was a tough header to give up to Terry, of all people, but I guess we'll get into that. You know?
We will get into it. How are your guys' weekends? It's okay?
I set my ass in a CPA review course for 14 hours.
How's that going?
It's all right. I have to finish it. I take it on Saturday, so it's going to be a raucous next few weeks of weekends back. You know,
we can celebrate next week on the pod. But we appreciate you taking your time out from studying. Bit of a study break. On to the Premier League. There's only really one place to start. Manchester United 1, West Bromwich Albion 2, obviously at Old Trafford. Affectionately named Fitinho, is that how we're going to call him now? Emil Fitinho's composed chip over David De Gea put West Brom in front after the break before Wayne Rooney's free kick brought United level. And then Bergoglio's low strike earned West Brom the victory. West Brom's first victory over Manchester United at Old Trafford since 1978. Before we talk about how rubbish Manchester United played and so on, I'd like to bring up or start with Kagawa. Not all rumours are true, but from the leaked word and the impression David Moyes gives, there doesn't seem to be a place for him in the side. Kevin, what do you make of it? Because I would rate Kagawa's Manchester United's only, or certainly the best Manchester United midfielder they have.
That was, I don't know, and then the news earlier today too, of Moyes saying he doesn't think they're going to do well in the Champions League. That was a new article that came up this morning. I don't know if it's Moyes being a master motivator or he's just out of his league. I mean, you have Kagawa, who I guess at the beginning of the season he had an ankle injury, and he was always said there was always talk of that he wasn't fit, and that was his excuse now. And now we know Kagawa's fit. There's no way an ankle injury carried on this far. And now it's maybe things that Moyes just doesn't want to play him, doesn't want to put him in the system. And I think that's it's idiotic. I mean, you need playmate. You need something. You need a spark. And why not shoot him? Why not put him in? Especially, like you said, losing at home to West Brom. I mean, like you said, we'll get into that. But they just looked average. They just looked like an average team. And nothing. There was no spark. There was no coming into it. There was nothing that, hey, put Kagawa in and let's see what happens.
I mean, certainly the only spark seems to be the one guy who might have left in the summer. Wayne Rooney seems to be the only spark. But you have this situation where Kagawa, who I think everyone would agree is a central attacking midfielder. That's his most effective position. And he starts for Man U, but he's placed on the left wing because Moyes says, well, he plays on the left for Japan. But then he only gives him 45 minutes on the left. He's subbed at halftime because United want to play more a squeeze type of play and play everything through the centre, which you would think Kagawa would be perfect for. And West Brom score counter-attacking on the left-hand side. I don't know what to make of it. Moyes is, Moyes to Kagawa is Mourinho to Mata, I suppose. I don't know what he doesn't see. And I mean, Kagawa didn't have the greatest season last season, but he's certainly better than a Tom Cleverley, I would have thought, or Michael Carrick.
You know, and something, I guess since we're talking about the Liverpool game in the background, if the pod listeners hear it, it's the Liverpool game going on. But, maybe use Kagawa as Liverpool, since it's talking about Moses, behind Sturridge and Suarez, and maybe do something like that. Because, you, like you said, they have the two playmakers up front. And we all know United's midfield is average. We knew that before the season. We knew that after the transfer window of Feliani. We knew that the back line's getting old. But their strongest point was always their attack. I mean, you have two arguably world-class players in Van Persie and Rooney. And when they're on, as we see, they can change games.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's this nothing, and I know you like stats, and a telling stat is, ever since the first game, United haven't scored on in open play since the first game in the Premier League. So it's either free kicks or penalties. So there's no, and that goes back to just no creativity. There's no opening up. And yeah. I think you kind of said also, I don't know what Moyes is doing. If he's forcing the ball into the middle, which there's nothing there.
Yeah, it's desperate times really for United, who have become only the second top flight English champions after Blackburn in 1995-96 season, to begin the following season with three or more defeats in their opening six games. There you go. So why do you think United are having this difficult start to the season? Do you think it's just real lack of quality? I mean, yesterday the defense were a shambles. They're all over the place. I mean, Vidic and Ferdinand, who are ever present, a great combination. Wow, they look, you know, terrible at times this season. Phil Jones, who everyone seems to rave about or have been raving about over the few years, look a shell. I mean, it was embarrassing at times, especially as a Manchester United supporter. Any prediction maybe on where they'll finish?
I mean, they'll be up there. I think we always said they'd be three or four, second.
Well, I think Mark said that they would come first or second.
I think we were always kind of more tempered. Right now, I don't know what it is. It's essentially the same team Fergie had last year.
Well, you know, sorry to interrupt you. This is what I tell everybody. That went this season, and you know, I got a lot of abuse when I said, man, you might finish out of the top three for the first time in Premier League history, right? And my reason for saying that was because I think Manchester, and you said it rightly, Man U's midfield, but even the squad in general, is distinctly average. I challenge any listener to tell me one Manchester United midfielder. Don't say Wayne Rooney's a midfielder. For this purpose, he's a striker. Name one Man U midfielder that would get into Spurs' team. Or would get in Chelsea's team.
Or even their back line. They're getting older.
Exactly. Even their back line. Now, Evra back in the day, one of the best left back in the world, possibly. Vidic, Ferdinand, two of the best centre backs. But, you know.
And it's just going back. It's just, I don't know what Moyes is doing. There's no motivation. I caught the game. They looked flat. There is just no motivation for those. There's no heart for them to play. And I don't know if it's, I don't know what's going on in the locker room. It could be something going on. Yeah. Maybe he just isn't out of control of the team. But, I mean, they got the players. They're decidedly average. But losing to West Brom at home is kind of a tough loss.
Yeah. No disrespect to West Brom.
Yeah, no disrespect to the West Brom fans out there. But, I mean, it's kind of a tough loss when you're trying. When
you're Premier League contenders or would-be contenders. Absolutely right. And this just shows how good Sir Alex Ferguson really was. He kept a very average team at the pinnacle of the Premier League for so long, and that speaks volumes.
And I think it goes back to now, maybe, I mean, it's something different, but now it's showing the lack of investment as well, where the United leadership kind of got complacent, knowing Ferguson was going to be there, and they didn't really need to go out and invest in the club, because now it's showing. I mean, you do have Jones, Cleverley. I mean, you do have the younger players, but I mean, they're not doing anything because they're trying to come up and there's a lot of pressure. So if there was that middle ground to the older squad and the younger squad, there's always that team that those 24 to 25 to 26 year olds that are always in the middle.
You know who one player that sums up that dilemma is Mesut Ozil. And the rumor was, man, you made a bid for him very last minute, but he's a guy who, still a relatively young guy, but at the, you know, we've seen what he's done for Arsenal, we saw what he did for Real Madrid, would have been the ideal signing for Manchester United, really fit that gap between the younger players and the the golden oldies of, you know, the over 30 club at Manchester United. Quickly moving on from Man U, because I know some of our listeners clearly hate Manchester United, so they fast forward that part every week when we talk about Manchester United. Sorry, but you know, that is the biggest club in the world, you know, according to Forbes, so it's pretty difficult to skip them. Tottenham won, Chelsea won, before I unleash Kevin Camacho to talk about his favourite team, Tottenham Hotspur. Gylfi Sigurdsson putting Spurs ahead before John Terry's 65th minute header. Fernando Torres received two yellow cards and was subsequently sent off. Before we talk about the very exciting game that it was, I think everyone would agree, Jose Mourinho branded Jan Vertonghen and the decision to send off Torres a complete disgrace. This is where I take issue. The first yellow, Kevin, I'm sure will agree with me. The first yellow, Torres, okay, slightly trips Vertonghen. Vertonghen goes down, well, whether he goes down softly, fair enough. But then Torres raises his hand and scratches the face of Vertonghen. Now, I don't know about Kevin or Gio or Mark or Brad or West or any of the listeners, but the last time I checked the Premier League rulebook, hell, even the FIFA rulebook, raising your hands to someone's face is an automatic red card. So the second yellow card, it doesn't even matter. It shouldn't have occurred in the first place. Kevin, agree with me, tell me I'm wrong, go for it.
No, I totally agree. It was stupid. I don't know, Mourinho was just trying, but I mean, it was kind of funny. Torres played his best game.
Oh, I absolutely agree.
He was amazing. He was all over. He was creating chances. He was actually the man of the match for the first half because Chelsea parked the bus. I don't know. That's why I kind of wish West was here. He's the special one, but he's playing horrible lineups, boring soccer for the first half, and it looked the same thing with Benitez. Chelsea just looked uninspired. They didn't play well. Spurs were all over the place. The one saving grace was, like I said, Torres creating all over. Oscar isn't a true 10. But when they switched Oscar, they moved Oscar out of that position and they put Mata in at halftime, it kind of opened up. And you saw a different Chelsea team. I don't still know what's going on. There's still, I mean, maybe that will fly. But I was nervous when Mata came on. I kind of laughed because finally
on. Mata did set up the... Yeah. It was his free kick that led to John Terry's header.
Yeah, and they just looked completely a different team. And it was just, I don't know what's going on with Mourinho, but I mean, if he can get that performance out of Torres day in and week in and week out, maybe they're going to be lights ahead. Cause
he did, absolutely. I thought Torres looked absolutely brilliant, taking on defenders. He seems to be lacking confidence, but we saw, I can't remember which two Spurs players, he was one-on-one, well, one-on-two against them, and he did a little bit of trickery and got round them, able to put in a cross, and Oscar should have scored. Tough to stretch that far. Villas-Boas said it. Would it have been different if Paulinho had stuck the ball in the back of the net 2-0 halftime when he hit the post? Would it have been different?
It would have been a different game. I mean, they still would have put Mata in because Mourinho needed to spark something. So I think that Mata substitution at half was good for Mikel. So that was a good substitution that opened it up. But it would have been way different. The pressure would have been more on Chelsea. And we would have been able to put in some of our more defensive-minded players earlier in the game and kind of hold the ball and put of our possession players in there rather than keeping some of our younger attackers in there. But 1-1, you can't take... I mean, it's tough to... if it was 2-0, 2-1, it would have been nice to have 3 points. But, I mean, when you're going against the big teams, you usually expect a draw. If you lose, then that's pretty bad. But, I mean, you don't win the Premiership by beating the... I mean, you do, but, I mean, winning the Premiership over the long season or beating the small teams. And that's what's always killed the Spurs.
No, you're absolutely... Yeah, that's a great point.
So...
Well, I mean, just look... I know, we're mentioning Manchester United again. Man U's record last season in terms of beating the Big Four was horrible. I think they only won one once against the Big Four in 8 games. But because they're consistent against all the lower teams, that's why they win the league. Do you think Spurs this season? I just want to get your... Before we're about to go on to Arsenal beating Swansea. And I was talking to a mate of mine, And he said, you know, Spurs, and he's a Chelsea fan, he said, Spurs killed us in that first half. And he's like, you know, I'd be mad if I was a Spurs fan, because this season, you really think they've got it in them to come above Arsenal. But look how great Arsenal have had the start of the season, incredible start of the season. I mean, quick prediction now, do you think Spurs will kick on? Where you finished, what, fifth last season?
Yes.
Fifth? Higher than fifth?
Oh, yeah, we'll be higher than fifth. Now with Man U, I mean, if Man U doesn't get it together, they may drop. But I think Arsenal, if Arsenal can stay healthy,
yeah,
they'll be contending up there. But right. I think we get fourth. It's just tough to overtake the Chelsea, even though Man City, both Manchester teams are just, I don't know what's going on with the Manchester. Yeah. But I don't think we'll overtake City. We won't obviously overtake Chelsea, because Chelsea's just looking, if they play like they did in the second half, then they'll be unstoppable. But fourth is a good prediction. It's just still a brand new team, but I'm still gonna profess my love, Eriksen.
Yes, tell me about Eriksen.
Eriksen was just everywhere. That first goal was because of him. That pass in Soldado tap to Sigurdsson. Eriksen is just, he's at 21 is playing world class. It's that signing, and it was kind of funny. Willian wasn't even on the bench for Chelsea, so. By Chelsea signing him, we got Eriksen, which directly played to that first goal. And I don't know, his creativity, his positioning, he always knew, and he'd even do the Parker-esque 360s, but I mean the way they looked, they were just clean and crisp, and he knew exactly where he was on the field and who was behind him. So he would do that 360, not as Parker slow, but he would do it and he'd make that pass right when he was done with that 360. So he just, His command, his beautiful pace, it's just, he's going to be a star.
I mean, it's £11 million Spurs bought him for. Bargain. And it's not that, you know, people say, oh, he's 21, it's a bit of a risk. I mean, nowadays, £11 million for a club like Tottenham isn't that big of a risk. And this guy's proven in the Champions League for Ajax how great of a player. This guy hasn't come out of nowhere. You know, people have known about him since he was 18, 19, so... Great piece. I thought that was arguably the best piece of business, weighing quality and the price you got for him. Phenomenal. On to your other favourite team, Arsenal. Swansea 1, Arsenal 2. I was surprised. I thought this was the game that Arsenal would see how good they are. I mean, Swansea have had a indifferent league start, but certainly in the Europa League, they have been outstanding. Arsenal extend their lead at the top of the Premier League to 2 points as goals from, can I say, Sergei Enbery? I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong. And Aaron Ramsey saw them to victory at Swansea. The result extends Arsenal's club record of consecutive away wins in all competitions to 12 and equals their record of 8 in the Premier League, which was set in the 2001-2002 winning campaign. Question for Kevin. 8 games, 8 goals, described as the new Patrick Vieira. Is Aaron Ramsey the complete midfielder? And how impressed have you been with your favorite team, Arsenal?
You know, it's kind of funny. With Ramsey having that hot streak, you know, you're still just expecting him to slow down and, I guess, cool off. Because at the beginning of the season, his goals were poaching. They weren't very creative. They were just kind of right place at the right time. But now, I mean, he's completely different. Maybe he's just gotten some confidence, and now he's gotten some swagger now by scoring those goals, and wingers keep playing him. Maybe it's just an unforeseen thing from Ozil. I still think Ramsey's an average player, and he's going to cool off eventually. But right now, I mean, they're riding the hot hand. So it's still Ramsey. It's still Aaron Ramsey. It still disappeared all last year. So I don't know. Arsenal, they're looking good. They're still missing, I think, a couple of players. So, I mean, they can only go up. I mean, it's not. But the one thing that will test them, and if they do play better midfielder teams, is Ozil does not play defense. Ozil just doesn't come back. So you have essentially, you lose two men with Giroud and Ozil up top to have to come back and defend. So that's going to be an issue. I mean, Wilshire's glass ankles, you know. But, I mean, I hate to say it, Arsenal's going to be up there. Arsenal-Chelsea, I'm not sure when they play. I got to see the fixture list. That's going to be an interesting game. It's going to be a big game. It's going to be bigger than Arsenal versus Man City or Arsenal, because we know, we all say Chelsea's going to be favorite, so that's going to be the biggest.
I think the Man U-Arsenal game is going to be the biggest, because, you know, for Manchester United fans, and even for Arsenal fans, there's no forgetting the amazing result. Was it 6-1 or a few years ago? I can't remember. It was an awesome day in which I would, you know, got obliterated after the game in such celebration. That would be an interesting game. I don't know about Ramsey being average. I think he's pretty good. I thought it was very interesting. He was getting booed. Obviously, former Cardiff player Aaron Ramsey getting booed at Swansea. I love that. But you know, you said something earlier which is absolutely true. The real test for Arsenal, well, is A, like you say, when they come up against a very, very good team that will test that midfield, that will put pressure on them. But most importantly, if they get injuries. I mean, if Wilshere or Ozil were to get injured, hell, even Ramsey at this point, he's become such a big player. If, you know, a couple of injuries, and then they will struggle. Although they've had a few youngsters come through the last few games that performed well. Be interesting to see it. If you're a Gunners fan, you're extremely happy. Won every game, apart from the first one this season.
And especially with Giroud. I mean, Giroud's just his touches, his positioning, his... I guess that's the best thing that they could have done, putting Ozil with Giroud, because it's just two great players, great creativity, great depth. They have deft passes. Their touch is just beautiful. And they just know. They know their placement on the field, and they know how to score. So I guess that's the best way to help out. So
Last point on Arsenal. Arsene Wenger came out this week and said he's more than happy to sign the rest of his managerial career with Arsenal. We can be very unbiased on this exact point. It's good to see Wenger still has the enthusiasm and drive to take Arsenal on, despite all the critics the last, 6-7 years.
Yeah, the pressure that he got from the past 6-7 years, and still want to deal with those Arsenal fans. Because, I mean, it's still...
But even the media, I mean, everyone getting on his back, and even us, you know, neutral, or should I say, un-Arsenal supporters, you know, some of us were questioning whether Wenger should really be there at Arsenal.
Which is kind of funny, because, I mean, we've said it, and everyone says it, makes a point of it, but counterpoint, I mean, to the west, southwest of him, in Chelsea, which they've just had a million different managers, and Mourinho plays the press more than Wenger, and maybe it's something, there's also NFL coaches, or American football, for us, our international pods, there's coaches that play the media that love to give them sound bites, and the media kind of holds back on them sometimes. But then there's coaches like Wenger, which I guess his best, a good example would be Bill Belichick for the Patriots, New England Patriots, for, you know, international listeners. He's just very, they'll ask, are you going to sign, or what's the health on the player? He'll just say, inactive, may play, and that's it. And they would try to ask more questions. He's like, I may play. I mean, just straightforward, yeah. And I mean, that's the same soundbite Wenger. Are you going to sign something? He's like, well, yeah. It's calm down, you know? So it's definitely something, the way the media plays. There's media has their darlings, and I mean, they love their soundbites. But if Wenger stays with Arsenal, it's going to be a good few runs. I mean, he has a chance to rival Fergie if he stays for longer.
Well, he said, he's the longest-serving manager in the Premier League at this, you know, point in time. Quickly on to Manchester City before we take a break. You mentioned it earlier. What's going on with the Manchester clubs? United lose and then City lose against Aston Villa, who have had a somewhat indifferent start of the season. They're in ninth, 6 games.
They either win or lose. They all or nothing.
6 games and only 9 points, but six of the 9 points, a win against Arsenal, then a win against City. Ahamadi, Bakuna, and Vyman for the 3 goals for Aston Villa, and Man City, Yaya Toure again, fantastic, and Eden Dzeko. And Man City obviously missed their chance to go top of the Premier League. You know, Pellegrini says he couldn't believe Man City's defeat. And, you know, Pellegrini's Man City have only taken 1 point from their first three Premier League away fixtures this season. City have won three of their last 11 away games, which is a stunning record, really. A record you wouldn't want to have. Is this, obviously, City and United, the only commonality between Manchester United, Manchester City at this point in time is A, the Manchester connection, and B, they lost this weekend. I mean, this is just a small little teething problems I expect for Pellegrini at City.
Yeah, they have the exact same team. I mean, what's changed from when they won the championship 2 years ago, except for a few signings?
Well, they got rid of the bad influence Balotelli.
Yeah.
Although we do like Super Mario. We did like a bit of controversy. And they've brought in people like Navas and Negredo.
And so they've added, I mean, they've been good. They're, I think it is, and we'll go into the La Liga, but I think it's, with Pellegrini, it's more of just learning the team and having a little bit of growing pains being Manchester. It's not, he completely has a different style as in Real Madrid with Carlo down there, but Pellegrini, it's just more learning curve. He's learning his players. It's still tough to give these points because, like we said, these points are big, especially, but I mean, I guess we can call Aston Villa giant killers for the rest of the year.
We can,
you know. So, and if they keep their streak, I don't know. Man City will be all right. Man City will challenge. It's going to be a three-team race: Chelsea, Arsenal, Man City. They'll be up there.
We'll see. Before, you did a fantastic segue, by the way, just to La Liga, which we're going to talk about in the second half. Just quickly, as you pointed out earlier, the sound from behind the pod was of Liverpool Sunderland. Sunderland, of course, firing their manager Paolo Di Canio, which we said on the pod last week was probably going to happen, and a day later it did. So, you know, we get some things right here on the ball. Sunderland lose 3-1 at home. Liverpool, Daniel Sturridge continues his great vein of form, and guess who's back? Back again. Suarez is back. Players first game of the season, 2 goals. Pretty remarkable. Liverpool are on quite a run, and Liverpool are now second in the table. 6 games played, 13 points. I mean, how well has Brendan Rodgers done? Because we spoke about Wenger maybe signing a new contract. There's rumours that the American owners, what is it, Fenway Sports, owners of what, Boston Red Sox?
Yeah.
That they want to offer Brendan Rodgers a new lucrative long-term contract. I mean, on this season's display, certainly.
And I guess we should have seen it coming, because the last half of the season, Liverpool were not, I mean, they weren't winning, but they were in games, they were playing, they were improving every game. They were improving. We saw some improvement, and I guess we should have seen it all put together. But, I mean, we didn't know Daniel Sturridge would be on fire. But
well, I think that's because, sorry, all summer, you've had the Man City having a new boss, Man U having a new boss, Arsenal's quote-unquote troubles, Chelsea, Mourinho back. You know, the only thing really from Liverpool you heard was, well, Suarez might be leaving. So that's their best player leaving. So there was this cloud of darkness over the summer. But you're right. I mean, last season, it showed. I mean, you're bang on right. They weren't maybe perhaps winning games, but you could see that gradual improvement. And this Liverpool team, make no mistake about it, are far better than Roy Hodgson's Liverpool or Kenny Dalglish's Liverpool. So
they're going to be dangerous. It's going to be Liverpool Spurs for 4th-5th. It's going to be a dangerous game. So
for 4th-5th?
4th-5th.
We'll see.
But how about we got to give a shout out to Southampton, 4th in the table.
We're now 5th in the table.
Fifth in the table now after Liverpool.
Only on goal difference.
A goal difference.
A goal, yes. A John Terry header has helped them out. Has helped Chelsea out. Fantastic for Southampton.
But it's so, I mean, we're both looking at the table, but it's so bizarre world. You see Southampton 5th, Man City 6th, Man U 12th, Cardiff 11th, Hull 7th.
Well, even Fulham in the bottom
three.
Yeah,
Fulham in regulation zone too.
I like Martin Yeo, obviously, former Spurs coach. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, and
they'll turn it around.
Fulham is where I was born, so I between Fulham and Chelsea, they're very close together.
But I mean, even if you look right now, you see Swansea 13, and they're supposed to be strong.
Well, they are.
I
mean, Europa League, fantastic.
Yeah, who's going to drop at the bottom? It's going to be a tough race at the bottom.
I know. The only position in the table that you're not shocked about is Everton in eighth. I mean, that's about it.
That's average. We know Everton's average. Always right there.
And Crystal Palace, obviously, and in the relegation zone, as most people predicted. We're going to take a break here on the ball. We're going to come back, talk about La Liga, Bell's home debut in La Liga. We're going to talk about Lionel Messi, Barcelona's new record. They seem to break records all the time. And then we'll talk about Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund, the Bundesliga. We'll be back. It's on the ball. So anyway, we're here. We're in between our break. We're getting our notes together for the La Liga and Bundesliga segments. I'm going to have a rant here, you know, because this is a soccer show, for instance, but I like to open up and ask people how their weekends were. And anyway, so this weekend, I have to tell you, this is a boring story. You guys listeners can tune out, unlike Gio, who's to my right, and Kevin, that's across from me. So if people don't know, On the Ball podcast does not pay all the bills, that's for sure. It's inner happiness is why we do this podcast. Anyway, so I'm in the service industry, which is probably a worse name for saying you're a server at a restaurant. And so I worked Friday night, and I got to tell you, I was so exhausted. I wanted to see someone's feet if they've been a server for 20 years, because their feet must be calloused the fuck up. Jesus Christ. Anyway, I was knackered, and I got out of work about 11 p.m. on Friday night, and I thought, well, a few of my mates wanted to go out, and I said, okay, fine, I don't want to be lame. Anyway, I get to this place, and I was almost falling asleep there. You know, it's one of those times where you're like, oh, I can't wait till everyone gets bored so I can go home and just sleep. I was exhausted. And I've been sick all weekend, too. And then I found out this morning, Gio will know this, right? Interfering mothers. Should we talk about interfering mothers? Or mums, as I would call them? So guess what? So my parents are in England, if people don't know. And so I was talking to my mom on Skype, and she was like, I'm not going to say her name. I emailed your ex-girlfriend. And I was like, no, why? Like, what the fuck are you doing? And then I was like, mom, why? Like, what are you doing? Oh, because my mom's the sweetest person in the world. You know, she can get mad sometimes, but sweetest person in the world. But she, like, I'll tell her, it could be about any person. I'd be like, no, mom, like, I could be like, yeah, my former best friend or my ex-girlfriend is like a murderer or something. My mom would still think, oh, but I thought they were so nice, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's the type of person my mom is. And yes, when my mom told me today, oh, yeah, I emailed her, blah, blah, blah.
What did she say?
What did my mom say? Just like, how she misses her, blah, blah, blah. Like, I was telling my mom, but she just doesn't get it. I'm like, do you realize how shit that made me look? I was like, hey, my ex probably thinks that I put you up to this, right? Very much so, right? And I was like,
tell the truth, Jake.
And then, no, I wasn't. And then my mom was like, oh, well, I did tell her that you don't know I'm contacting her. And I was like, A, she won't believe it. And B, that's probably even worse. Because now my ex is like, yeah, look, I got his mom to love me, you know, type of shit. Like, oh, anyway, that's my rant over. But it was a somewhat wild inner mental weekend for me. So if anyone has any interfering parents, you can, you know, have a high five from me. I feel your pain, or you feel my pain. Anyway, we'll take a quick 2-minute break. We'll be right back. And we're back to the soccer section of On the Pool podcast. Thank you for listening to my rant or fast forwarding it, either way. Lionel Messi, as Kevin just told me, is out for between 2 and 3 weeks, thigh injury. Obviously, his club Barcelona won against Almeria 2-0 for a club record 7th straight La Liga win at the start of the season. Now, bear in mind that we're going to talk about Real Madrid, the Madrid derby, Atletico and Real. And Atletico Madrid, no, spoiler alert, beat Real Madrid and have won all 7 of their first games this season. I have a a bone to pick, Kevin, okay? So, as soon as I said that stat before, after the game, that stat was released or whatever, and someone said to me, oh, I thought, you know, Villanova had this record, blah, blah, blah. And it got me thinking, you know, whenever I somewhat trashed Pep Guardiola's record as Barcelona manager, when I said such quote-unquote obscene things as anybody could manage the greatest team in the world, surely this just shows you. Because not only did Guardiola win everything, Villanova looked like a bloody genius when he had this, well, I think they were unbeaten for their first 15 games last season, Barcelona. And now this new guy's come in and they've won 7th straight in a row. I mean, could anyone manage Barcelona? Or am I too simplistic on this?
Nah, you're fine. I mean, I wish I could show people on the pod this picture that I'm going to show Jake. Maybe I'll post it online. That's Xavi's passes. And then you can look at Iniesta's passes. That was the first 30 minutes of the game.
Wow, that is incredible.
And I'll post it on the pod for the listeners. But it's essentially a map of Xavi's passes in the first 30 minutes of the game. And it's just versus Iniesta's passes. And it across the board, I mean, he controls. He's everywhere. Wow. Everything was a successful pass. There's only a couple of long shots I think he just kicked out of there. But yes, indeed, anyone could coach that with Xavi controlling that possession.
To train a picture for the listeners, there's a picture of a pitch, a soccer pitch, and then in blue is the passes that Xavi made. And half the pitch is blue. Like, it's just a sea of blue. Incredible. Yeah, we'll put that on the On The Ball Soccer Podcast Facebook page. Here at the London on Greenville Avenue. Quick plug. Messi being out, I know it's only 2 or 3 weeks. Do we think that will have any effect on Barcelona? And they're maintaining this incredible run of results.
No, I think they're still fine. They may not win as flashy, missing their goal, but it kind of helps Celtic out, though. Celtic can get some momentum, motivation, and be like, "Hey, we don't have to play against the best player in the world, arguably."
Well, yeah, that's a great point. I mean, Champions League coming up this week. Celtic, they played Barcelona last season, didn't they? They won one game, and were 30 seconds or whatever from winning the second game, or was it the first? I mean, incredible. And quick prediction, you think this time now Barcelona will squash Celtic out the way?
Yes. It'll be a close game, but I think Barcelona's still going to beat Celtic. Celtic's still, I mean, love Celtic, but they're still not up there with the best team, one of the best teams in the world. But, I mean, with that possession, some of that. But, I mean, with Barcelona playing right now, and we can go to Real Madrid, it's kind of the same problem where, I guess it's the new manager at Barcelona that's pushing up the offense a little bit more, because I did see a little bit of highlights that they were a little bit higher up rather than paying Pep's back and just making passes. So, I mean, that might be something that later on the line, that maybe on a countering attack team like Real Madrid may come back and bite them. But, I mean, that's a flawless team right now. They stay healthy. They're still... They're running with it. They're gonna be dangerous in the Champions League. And
I guess with Messi's layout now, he has more time to think about the tax fraud investigation that he went through on Friday, where he obviously appeared before a Spanish judge, scored within 21 minutes a curling shot from 20 yards. But yeah, we'll see. Barcelona obviously joint top of the league. With Atletico Madrid, who for the first time in 23 winless games against Real Madrid, they won. Gareth Bale's home debut for Real Madrid, it was a 1-0 defeat. Gareth Bale made a goal-scoring debut in the 2-2 draw with Villarreal. But it was, you know, the Brazilian striker, I mean, Costa, who had been a target for Liverpool in the summer, was the man that got that game, well, got that win for Atletico Madrid. Looks like they didn't miss Falcao, who's been scoring a ton of goals in Liga A. And Atletico Madrid have won five successive away league games, their best run in the Spanish top flight. Now, tell me, Kevin, what is going on with Real Madrid? I mean, I thought this was supposed to be a two-team league. Real Madrid, one of the two.
Selling off Higuain. I mean, it just Benzema just looks crap. Benzema's not playing the link-up play. It all goes back to Carlo's possession football. Team doesn't work. Team's not built that way. Real Madrid's built on a counter attack. We have Ronaldo. It's speed across the board. You're asking Benzema to play link-up play to hold, essentially. I don't know why he sold Ozil. If you're going to play a possession style link-up play, why are you going to sell your best attacking midfielder? Why are you going to sell the guy who could hold the ball? Because we know Bale's not going to do it. Carlo's leaving Ronaldo on an island, and of course Ronaldo's always going to get double teamed. So you're either forcing Ronaldo to come in the middle, crowd the midfield, which you're already doing anyways because you're playing the possession football, or you send Ronaldo out on an island and he's not going to do anything when he's out there and he already has two defenders watching him. Bale, when he came on, Isco was the shit yesterday. He just was shit. He didn't do anything. But Bale came on. He played timid, which shows, obviously, the $100 million in his head.
You think it's a mental thing with him?
Yeah. I think right now it's a mental thing just because he has $100 million. But, I mean, it shows... If Ronaldo has a bad game, Ronaldo's not doing anything, CR7.
Then Real Madrid do nothing. But that's what they said last, in the Champions League and last season. You stop Ronaldo, you stop Real Madrid. Interesting to see. I mean, the big question for me is, you mentioned why sell Ozil. I wouldn't have sold Ozil. I would have told Luka.
Or Higuain, those two.
Well, yeah, I suppose so. Higuain... They only play with one striker. I could see Higuain wanting more playing time, I suppose. Higuain doing great for Napoli, who I believe are a top of Serie A as well. I would have sold Modric. I would have told him, hey, go back to Spurs. Hell, man, you would have signed Modric. Yeah, I mean, if I was Real Madrid, I'd have sold Modric over...
And Ozil. when he came on, what's funny, because when he actually came on and helped, he kind of stabilized Real Madrid.
Modric?
Yeah, Modric. Mm-hmm. So when he came on... In the game, he kind of stabilized it, but I mean, there was just a mess. They were playing long balls. They were playing essentially the U.S. national team play before they used to do it. Just counterattack and try to play the long ball, which when you have your fastest guy, Ronaldo, getting double teamed and already getting marked, you have Bale on the other side that's trying to get into the team that's also going to be marked. I mean, there's nothing there right now, and also it's kind of funny. I mean. Ramos has always been a hothead and kind of a physical player. Yeah. But, I mean, they're showing they're going to get a red card. They're playing very defensively, aggressively.
Is Pepe still playing? Mm-hmm. That guy's got to be the dirtiest player I've ever... Everybody go to YouTube and type in Pepe the Assassin, and you'll see the type of damage that guy does. But Real Madrid have always had that temperament that when they're a bit sore losers, I think, they always... start fouling people and getting overly aggressive when they're losing, especially when a big game like the Madrid derby.
But, I mean, I guess we also got to give some Atletico credit.
Absolutely.
Because their defense just held, one of the best players in the world. I guess you can say, I wouldn't call Bale, I mean, I guess we can say Bale for the money. I mean, but they held Isco, Ronaldo, Bale, Benzema was kind of hidden, but, I mean, you could say they held Benzema. I mean, you name those four players right there, all attacking players, and they held them to doing, essentially relegated them to nothing. So I guess we got to give some credit to Real. And I guess you kind of said two league, but I guess I'll ask you a question. Has it become a three-team race now?
That was a question I was about to ask you.
Yeah.
I think it'll be interesting to see whether Atletico, obviously, like I say, just like Barcelona, seven games, seven wins, whether they... keep this form up. I think we'll know by Christmas. If they're still in within 3 points of Real Madrid and Barcelona by Christmas, then you can say yes. What will be very interesting, and I hope it will become a three-team league, because La Liga, I've trashed it a little bit before, by calling it a two-team league, but there is some fantastic football there, and I don't discredit all the teams. Athletic Bilbao killed my Manchester United a few years ago, so there are great teams in La Liga. But maybe. You know, what will be interesting is if Ancelotti only finishes third with Real Madrid, he surely is not going to keep his job. The way that Florentino Perez and the former hierarchy of Real Madrid have acted over, what, the last 20 years. They fired up Vicente Del Bosque for winning the bloody Champions League. So finishing third, I mean, I think Ancelotti is history if that happens. I'll be amazed if
no, especially with that team, the amount of money in that team now.
Yeah, exactly. They just...
I think he needs, like I was saying earlier, and I'm just going to repeat, he needs to adapt the system. Possession football is not going to work with that team who have speedy wingers, Bale and Ronaldo. I mean, you're going to play possession football when you have probably arguably two of the fastest big guys in the world. You can't play that ball. You can't play Barcelona ball when you have those two guys on the corners or the two guys on the wings. It'll be interesting to say.
Do you think it's going to be a three-team league this season?
I think so. Atletico Madrid's going to keep. I mean, they have some good. They have some good players, and the way they're playing defense right now. If their back line can continue to play that week in and week out, the Atletico versus Barcelona game is going to be huge. Because it's going to be interesting to see how they. Obviously, they won't win possession, but it's going to be interesting to see how their defense plays against the Barcelona possession of just passing it back and forth, and how they mark their men, how they keep their positions. It's going to be an interesting chess match to see that game. And we'll see if anyone can just come in and fill in with the Barcelona, because that will actually require some coaching, some tactics, some adjustments to see what's going on in that game. So it's going to be a good chess match, but I think it's going to be a three-team league. If Ancelotti can work Bale and Modric together like they did at Tottenham, because there's some history there. If they can get that relationship back up and running, then they'll be all right.
Yeah, I think we both agree. Diego Simeone at Atletico Madrid deserves a fantastic player. He was, and he deserves credit for what he's done with Atletico Madrid, especially seeing as though they lost arguably the best striker in the world, Falcao, over the summer. So doesn't look like they missed it. And they do lose. Atletico Madrid lose their best player every summer. Whether it's Fernando Torres way back when, whether it's Sergio Aguero, or whether it's Falcao. So it's fantastic to see them, making a real fist of it. And the Barcelona game, you're right, will be a huge game now. Whether they go out and, you know, try to go out on their shield and attack Barcelona, which I think is always, people have to do that. If you just give Barcelona the ball, you're not going to win. You're not going to get it back. You got to go out and attack them, because Barcelona's weakness is their defense. So hopefully, Atletico Madrid give a good fist of it. But Atletico Madrid and Barcelona both unbeaten, well, winning all their games. Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund also remain unbeaten. Dortmund, who are top of the table on goal difference, beat Freiburg 5-0. With Robert Lewandowski scoring twice.
Yeah, can we stop questioning, I guess, his motivation or whatever? I mean, obviously he's going to be professional and play, even though he's whining.
What do you make of this? That's a good point. You're obviously alluding to it. This week he comes out, he's interviewed, I believe, how do you pronounce it? It's BILD. It's the biggest sports newspaper in Germany. And he gets interviewed and pretty much says, on one hand, well, I'm leaving Dortmund for sure, and it will probably be January, and it will probably be Bayern. And then he was forced to backtrack a little bit and say, oh, maybe it's not Bayern, but you know, he could leave in January, blah, blah, blah. You're right, he's still scoring, still motivated to do well, looks at least happy on the field. But surely Dortmund are going to miss him when he leaves. Oh, fantastic.
That's another team that we can't. I mean, they're still there with the Atletico Madrid, Dortmund.
Dortmund
loses Dortmund all their players.
Yeah, from Kagawa to Götze, like they lose their best. Sahin obviously went to Real Madrid a few years ago. Obviously now back at Dortmund. Another chance that these teams just churn, you know, out players when they lose their best ones. But you've got to. I mean, Bayern Munich edged out Wolfsburg 1-0 thanks to Thomas Müller's goal. And both Bayern Munich and Dortmund have 19 points from 7 games. Pretty impressive. Do you think Dortmund are going to be... They lost, obviously, in the Champions League last round of games. They play, obviously, again this week. Do you think now they'll get distracted? They lost their first game. How do you think their form in the Champions League, if they were to lose again? I mean, two losses out of the 6 games in the Champions League group stages. Do you think that will have an effect maybe on their league form?
If they do, it's only because Klopp allows it to happen. If they lose, I don't think they're going to lose their motivation, because essentially it's always they want to knock off the big dog. They want to take down Bayern Munich because their fans would not allow them to go down in the league. Now, the only worry would be is if, say, they play and then they're losing, and let's say Lewandowski goes down in a Champions League game and they still lose. So what happens? That's the only way I'd see them going back down if they lose in the Champions League game. I don't see any hangover from a loss in the Champions League, because we've seen it year in, year out. There's no hangover from them winning. Why would there be a hangover from them losing? And I mean, they're in, I think, the toughest group with Napoli and Arsenal. So I mean, it's not like they're losing to the lower teams. It's they're losing to some of the best teams in Europe.
Yeah, in the competition. That's absolutely true.
So I think they'll be all right. Now, which would be interesting. Let's say Coop ever leaves.
Well, yeah, he always, whenever these big jobs, when Man City need a new manager, Chelsea, it's always a Klopp might join. That's a different scenario. Obviously, the manager is the most important person at any football club. You know, ask a lot of Manchester United fans, they will tell you the same thing. A manager makes the biggest difference. Quick note to Sami Hupia, former Liverpool defender, fantastic player, obviously, in his day. He's now manager of Bayer Leverkusen. They're just 1 point behind Dortmund and Bayern Munich after beating fourth-placed Hannover 2-0. Leverkusen, it's their second season under Hupia, and they're drawing their best ever start to a season with 6 wins and 1 defeat from 7 games. I don't think I even have to ask Kevin. I don't think we believe Bayer Leverkusen are going to put up that much of a fight in the long run in the Bundesliga. I think it's Dortmund and Bayern the whole way, right?
Yeah, I mean, they got kind of... I mean, even they put out an egg versus Man U. So, I mean, it's... I don't expect them their run to keep going up, but I mean, it'd be interesting to see if they do, but I don't see it. I just don't see it.
We'll see. I mean, Leverkusen's...
They have history, but...
They have fantastic history, Michael Ballack and you know, me and your favourite player, Dimitar Berbatov, playing for them. Fantastic history. And, yeah, that is, well, the Bundesliga roundup with well, unsurprisingly, Dortmund and Bayern Munich joint top of the league.
With the Bayern a point behind.
Yeah, Bayer Leverkusen a point behind, and then 6 points Hannover in fourth behind, 6 points behind Leverkusen. Any final thoughts, Kevin? Are you happy with that 1-1 with Chelsea?
Yes, because we looked amazing in the first half. If we can keep that form in the first half, it's going to be we're going to be a dangerous team. I can't say enough praise to Eriksen. AVB came in and he just had his team on fire. Now, the only reason, and I'll say it, I mean, obviously, Mata hit that free kick and Harry hit that goal, Terry hit that header in. Chelsea doesn't play Mata, we probably maybe get another goal or Chelsea parks the bus.
Yeah.
And I just, it's funny because, I mean, they're still, I guess they're giving him, I guess they're still giving Mourinho because of his past, kind of, I guess, a freebie, but I mean, how long is that freebie gonna last? Because Chelsea's just playing.
You know, I think this whole, you know, there's the perception that Jose Mourinho, and I know we spoke about the Chelsea Spurs game before, but just to end the pod, you know, there's this perception that Jose Mourinho, the British media loved him and everybody loved him, and a lot of people did, but there was some stuff that people were tired of. You know, they don't like the Mourinho that goes around and pokes assistant managers in the eye or, you know, if you're a journalist, a sports journalist, you get pretty mad when you go to a game and you're looking forward to that interview with Jose at the end of the game and he doesn't turn up for the press conference. And that happened quite a lot with his first stint at Chelsea. So he's not as loved as people like to make out, and I think he does get his critics, especially with Mata. I mean, that is a huge decision. Chelsea's best player, 2 years running, comes on, clear, as you said, clear as day, made the difference, got the assist. So I don't think he's quite immune. But to end the immune from criticism, to end it, before that game started, Chelsea-Tottenham, it was built as a battle between the master
and the protege.
And the protege, the apprentice.
The apprentice.
You know? With Villas-Boas was asked, why him and Jose aren't so close anymore. And he what did he say? He said that when he was, because he was Chelsea, obviously, if people don't know that Andre Villas-Boas was the chief scout and, I guess, tactics man in some way for Jose Mourinho at Porto, then at Chelsea, then at Inter Milan. And Villas-Boas said in the interview this week before the game that basically he went to Jose and said, look, I'm really ambitious. I want to do more stuff and help out more. And Jose said, no, that's not going to be possible. So Villas-Boas left, went back to Porto. Any thoughts on? It was nice to see a handshake between the two former managers. But should people be upset? I mean, should Jose be upset at Villas-Boas for having that ambition to become more than a chief scout? I don't know. I don't know why there's so much sour grapes between Mourinho and Villas-Boas.
I think obviously there's a backdoor that sour grapes, because I think it goes back to maybe Villas-Boas questioned Mourinho on one thing.
Yeah.
And I think it was at the height of Mourinho's ego. You don't question him. So I think that's what started. It wasn't that maybe, it probably was that he said, hey, you probably are doing this wrong, or something behind the doors that isn't, I guess, kosher, that we can say behind the lines. Because, I mean, that's the political answer. Hey, I mean, yeah. I wanted to help. I wanted to. I mean, that's as politician is the answer you're going to get, because he's like, I wanted to further my career, not attacking. But I think something happened where Villas-Boas attacked or questioned Mourinho's authority, and it kind of, the ego overtook it.
We'll see. To end the pod, I'm just looking at the On the Ball Soccer Podcast Fantasy League. Right now, I only have 20. Well, Everton play Newcastle, I believe, tomorrow. So I have Jagielka, Baines, and Barkley in my team. So I haven't got their points. But in the league, do you know, Gio, where you are in the league?
No clue.
Oh, bro, you're in the relegation zone. You're 16th. I'm Jake the host. Yes, I'm in 12th. Very, very average right now. Kevin, leading the way with in fifth. You're leading, you're flying the flag for the On the Ball Soccer Podcast team. Where's West at? There he is.
And full disclosure, I did play around with my team last week. So.
Oh, nice one. Well, West is in eighth. Where's everyone? Mark's in 14th. Mark, what's going on, mate? Come on. But yes, Saranj Saran is top of the On the Ball Soccer Podcast Fantasy League. 328 points. I think he's been top of the league every single week so far. So yes, get on, check that out. I don't think you can join the league anymore, but it's always interesting to see if you're in it. Some of the Atish, Brown Town FC in ninth. Coming for you, dude. I'm only a few points off. We'll see. For me, for Gio, thank you, Kevin, for being on the show this week.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Oh, well, we appreciate you being here. And for everyone, have a good week. We will see you next week. And remember, Londoner, Greenville, yes, good food, good beer. And this is where we record the show. This is almost a famous place. One day, this is where it began. Thank you, guys, and we will see you next week. Ciao.
Is this their moment? Beckham.
Bobak diye.